It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 358 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so very much for listening. This week is the return of Nathan Luth and Nadja Baer, the creators of Impure Blood, among other things. Now, I've talked with them before, and they have big news for Impure Blood fans. We'll let them tell that during the interview. But let's just say you can now get this series in a new place. We talk about what's going on in the Impure Blood universe, as well as what things these two up-and-coming creators have in store for us as fans. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get to it. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Nathan Luth and Nadja Baer, the creators of Impure Blood, a series I really enjoy. And you've got some big stuff happening there. I got a chance to read the fourth volume, which I really enjoyed. So how are you doing, Nathan? Let's get you settled.
I'm doing well. Currently working on formatting Impure Blood, all four volumes for Comixology.
Wow.
And it's all currently available on Amazon.com.
Oh, wow. How about you, Nadja?
I'm letting Nathan take care of all of that, so I'll turn it out.
Yeah, I did some formatting for Comixology. It's not entirely easy, so it's going to take some doing. But so the fourth volume is now out. When did that come out, Nathan? What? Because it looks like it says November of last year. Is that when this came out?
That's correct. We finished it up in November, and we released started selling copies of it in December. So
wow.
Finally.
Just in time for the holidays.
That's right.
Just in time for the holidays. So that's good. So, well, Nadja, why don't you talk a little bit about wrapping up this storyline? Because, you know, you've got three volumes of setup all going, and it really works well. And when you get to the conclusion, you've got a lot of things that happen. What was it like to juggle all those different parts, to put all those different characters, to bring them to some kind of resolution?
Well, thankfully, the way I write, I knew how it was going to end before I knew how we were going to get there. So that was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that changed along the way, but I kind of knew the general spot where we were going to end up. So for me, the trickier part was more in late three, going into the fourth volume to make sure that everything that I had going on at the end of volume three was on the right trajectory to get wrapped up and in the place where I thought it was going.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't you give people like a brief summary of what Impure Blood's all about?
Oh, the short answer, the long answer. at a high level, for me, Impure Blood is kind of the question of what's your identity? How much do you let your external influences dictate your identity and how much of it comes from within? Because you have a lot of, there's a lot of, prejudice and lots of societal influence that you see against the ancients. And you really see that a lot with Roan, to a lesser degree, some of the other characters who aren't quite so obviously mutated. But then you also have people who have to continually ask themselves questions on why am I doing the things that I'm doing? Yes, this is expected of me. But can I have different and better expectations for myself?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see that a lot in the wrap-up with Elnor's character, where she goes from, being proud of being this really accomplished assassin, but then she really has to start questioning whether what she's doing is right.
Mm-hmm. I love the one part, and I don't think it'll spoil something to say, but there's a promise that's been made, and she brings up to Dara the thing that maybe this isn't necessarily an oath that's worth keeping. Kind of stuff. And I like that because, again, you're talking about being true to yourself. And I like that. And it really brings things to that little sequence
pivots the story in a nice direction, which I really liked.
Yeah, so that's kind of where you start going in for the home run.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Nathan, how about you? I mean, you know, considering the artwork and all these characters, there's battle sequences, there's all kinds of things going on. It must have been something to... What was it like when you drew the last character, the last page? What was that like for you?
Oh, I, like, kicked back and, like, breathed a sigh of relief, then I had a beer. But, like, it was one of those... I knew the work wasn't totally done because, again, you had the exciting and sexy work of formatting it for publication and whatnot, but it was definitely bittersweet living in this world, trying to flesh out this world and characterizing these characters, if you'll let me use it, is just like, wow, is this really the last time I'm going to draw these guys? No, that can't be right. I'm sure something will come up again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, it must be something because you guys spent years on this project, as I was reading. I read the afterword. In like 2009, this whole thing got started, so it's been like 9 years that you guys have been bringing this to fruition. That's, you know, it really shows it, though. It's got a lot of detail, a lot of thought went into it, and also I thought a lot of hard work, you know, the elbow grease thing, as far as the art goes. It just, I didn't see a single panel where I felt like anything was less than the best you guys could provide.
I wish I felt the same, but I appreciate that. I will definitely say I'm glad I'm not going to have to draw another epic battle scene for a while, because that did get to be a bit.
So, the battle sequences, Nadja, how did you, in working with Nathan, did you give him direction on what you wanted to see there? Did you, you know, how did writer-artist integration kind of stuff, what did you do? Did you work with him as far as getting the sequences the way that they ended up, or did you kind of leave that to Nathan to draw the battle sequences?
I think early on, if you talk, you know, the first 8 pages to the first 24 pages, I really tried to be prescriptive and kind of try to write it in a cinematic way so that he could see the battle that was going in my head. And I think at the end of volume 4, I pretty much just said, and here's a page full of battle.
Go nuts.
So what was that like then, Nathan? I mean, you were basically choreographing all this good stuff. I mean, knowing that you're coming to the end, we talked about the fact that it was kind of a bittersweet thing, but as far as doing the battle sequences, because, you know, it's action and stuff is something that's important to comics, and to bring these things and make them work like you did, that must have taken some effort on your part to bring that together.
Yes, it did. but it was fun. It was work, but it was fun work. The timing of a lot of this stuff was so important. A lot of these triumphant moments, a lot of these gut punch moments. It was very important to me to drive home the emotional feel, the resonance of those things. So I'm so glad that it came across.
Mm-hmm. It was really great. I really liked it. And sometimes in battle sequences, I can't follow what's going on or who's doing what to who, but I thought you did a really great job of making that cohesive so that I know what's happening from panel to panel. I like that.
Thank you so much.
It's really good stuff. So we get to the end of the book, and we don't want to spoil the book because we want people to read the all 4 of them, which are great. And I highly recommend, if you haven't read Impure Blood, I highly recommend it. It's just one of those great stories. It's the kind of thing which leads me to ask, are you guys going to put a collected volume out?
It's an idea we've kicked around, definitely. Let's see. And I keep running out of room on my convention table setup. So if things keep going the way they are, I'll leave it at this. We have no concrete plans to do it at the moment, but it is definitely not outside the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good because I have a place on my shelf just ready for it.
All right.
Which would be great. So I would love to see that.
We'll add it to the list.
Yeah, because that would be great. Because there are certain books that I want to keep forever. There's a book called Rust that I really loved, and there's a, and I have all the volumes of that. I asked him if he was going to put it together, and he was thinking about it. You know, it's tough to put a complete volume, especially because that was just like yours. That's four volumes together.
Yeah.
And so but on the other hand, I really love it. It's nice to have a collected version. You can just put your head in and stay there for a while in that universe. So right. I really like that. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about the characters? You know, sometimes I forget the names of them because you've got this, you know, this wide cast of characters. Dara is the main character, right? The girl of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And she, at the end, we get to kind of see her resolution comes along. And as I think I talked with you guys before, I have this thing that I really want to see strong female characters. And I thought this book really was a perfect example of how to do a strong female character and do it right, that she gets to be herself, as we've talked. And when she does those things, I cheer her on. You know, I was sitting there going, yes, yes. You know, do those kinds of, you know, if you've got to, you know, if you've got to beat the bad guy by doing some things that aren't necessarily the that other people may not agree with, it's all the best. And so I really like that about her. Well, not to talk about that as a, you know, with a female character like this, and many people now are telling me it doesn't matter. That just happens to be who she is. But to me, it's a big deal to have a strong female lead. And what was that to you? Yeah, see, I some people have told me, oh, well, it's just kind of the way it is. It just kind of fell naturally that way. And I you know, I'm glad to hear that. But on the other hand, I'm really thrilled when I see a character like this. You know,
I made it my mission. I think when I originally started thinking about this story, it's very easy to fall into, like, putting a lot of stuff on Roan. Mm-hmm. He's very, very much more visually representative of a lot of the problems of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But me being me and me liking strong female characters and me liking realistic and flawed female characters,
mm-hmm.
Was more important than anything else. I think it's been a positive trend where I've seen a lot of, especially indie published properties, going for the strong female character.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people not doing it in a way that I would necessarily agree with. I think it's been pushed a little bit too far into this female hero paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to make a relatable and flawed individual, and, you know, just kind of so that you read it and you say, oh, she just so happens to be female.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a very pointed purpose in making her female too. It's like I want to read more of that, so that's what I put out there.
Cool. How about you, Nathan? What was your impression of it?
Well, I was about just wanted to add, definitely helps to have a strong female writer on the project. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it a lot. It's something that, as you say, you don't see enough of in comics, and when you do see it, it's not always done well. And having a flawed, conflicted character is that much more fun to draw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're all, like, if they're one note, that's you basically wind up drawing the same thing over and over and over again. But Dara and all the cast kind of go through the entire emotional spectrum at some point or another over the course of the story,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is handy for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to ask one question, too, about the story. I don't want to spoil anything, but when we get to the last several pages, there's no dialogue. Now, you know, Nathan, it looks like Nadia is turning it over to you and letting you do the wrap-up without any kind of dialogue. What was that like for you? I mean, you've had dialogue the rest of the thing. You have to account for it when you draw. What was it like when you got to basically wrap up the story with your art?
That was something that Nadia and I kind of, we talked about a bit. I am very much a sucker for, you know, not necessarily they lived happily ever after, but, you know, epilogues, you know, like what the characters, you know, kind of wound up doing in I think Nadia was more inclined to be like, you know, story's over. Let's not Return of the Kings this. But I wanted something. So I really tried to have a dialogue with Nadia about how what the characters were doing, where they were going. And I don't think it was actually in the script to have three big splash pages at the end for an epilogue, but it was something that I kind of wanted to do as kind of a fade out. And she was generous enough to give me that space to let me do that, and I had fun with it.
It's really, and you know, trying not to put any details in, but it ends up really well, I thought. You know, sometimes how a story concludes makes the story, and how this one concluded, I really liked. It came together so nicely, and everything tied together perfectly, you know, as far as those things go. I couldn't think of a better way to end it than to do the kind of things that you guys did. And there are so many times I read, the build-up is great, and then we get to the end, blah. But that's not with you guys. This four volumes really comes to what I consider to be a great conclusion. So I want to congratulate you guys on that.
Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
We tried really hard.
Yeah.
So is Impure, you were talking to Nathan, is Impure Blood done now? Are there any other stories in the Impure Blood universe you guys might like to tell?
Definitely have to kick that one to Nadia. She's a story mistress extraordinaire. So.
Yeah, I have at the moment jumped to more of a urban fantasy novel and a science fiction novel set of stories. Said that poorly. And we had, because there was so long between when I wrapped up the script and, you know, it takes Nathan considerably longer to draw them. So I started working on something else. I think each character has more stories after this leaves, but I don't currently have them written down or any immediately foreseeable plans to write them.
Okay.
If that non-answer helps.
Okay.
Let's see. You did mention that possibly a Caspian Elnor spinoff.
Yeah, they would be the next logical one that I would do, I think.
I keep making the joke that a Roan Caspian buddy comedy road trip would read the heck out of that. And let's see. And I kind of poked her a little bit about maybe doing like a Redwall kind of thing where, you know, like go back in time 100 years and tell the story of, you know, how the ancients and the humans first fell out and that kind of thing. I don't think she was quite as interested in that as I was.
Okay. Prequels are kind of the thing, you know. Star Wars went back and did prequels and stuff, and Star Trek, of course, now is doing a prequel too. So, but I'm torn on it.
Well,
yeah. I'm always torn when they do prequels because, you know, I kind of like to see things moving forward rather than looking backwards because we know where we're going to get when we get a prequel.
See, Wayne's on your side.
Yeah, I'm kind of...
If it's important to the story being told, it needs to be in the story.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
Need to go back and explain it later.
Okay. That's kind of my feeling, too, as far as those things go. I like. Anyway, it's... You know, if you guys decided to do a prequel, I would certainly love it. I would get a kick out of that as well. So why don't we talk about your other guys' other projects? The last time you and I talked about Melting Down, which I really liked. Any news on that one? Is it that... is there any progress or other kinds of stories coming along those lines?
Let's see. We also have Incredible Adam and a Day with Autism in that kind of series. For listeners that may not necessarily be familiar with what we're talking about, it's part of a series of books I worked on for a residential program in Wisconsin featuring young people growing up on the autism spectrum and with various other behavioral disabilities. I don't know that... the residential program that I mentioned is currently commissioning anymore, but there's a few in the series. For There's Melting Down, which is a fictional biography compiled from true-life accounts of growing up with Asperger's. There's Incredible Adam and a Day with Autism, which is kind of a day in the life of a young man growing up in a assisted living facility. And also Medicine for My Big Brother, which is kind of the story of a family's struggle about finding the right medication for their autistic son as told through the eyes of his older brother, who's also kind of coming to terms with the fact that his younger brother is going to require a lot more attention than he is growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. Those are the ones out now. If anybody is interested in learning more or other books of that nature, I recommend checking out the ORP Library.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the guys that are putting that out.
Mm-hmm. Now, Najee, you mentioned novels. As I was looking at the file I got for four, there's Redemption and Retribution. Are those the ones you're talking about?
That's the first series that I'm working on. That's more of the urban fantasy one, mm-hmm. About a research assistant who stumbles onto a conspiracy to cover up the existence of an immortal. And I've not quite figured out how to pitch more of it without giving spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've got a good six books of that in my head that I'm trying to get out.
Wow.
The first one is out and available on Amazon. Retribution I'm currently working on. And then I've got another story that I'm kind of kicking around in my head called Antivirus, more of a cyberpunk thing.
Mm. And again, we got strong female characters in this series.
Yes, I've found that I default everyone to female, and I have to make an effort to include male characters and make sure that I'm not including them just as antagonists.
That's interesting. Can you expand, talk a little bit more about that? Because, you know, in the comics and in novels and stuff like that, so many times it's the male character, you have to struggle to get the female in there. To have that reverse like that is really interesting. Is that...
Yeah, well, part of me is, it's just because I want to read more female characters. So when I was kind of cutting my teeth, I would really look critically at who am I including.
Mm-hmm.
And I would find that I would have one main character was the female, and everyone around her would be defaulting to male all the time.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's what you're used to reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, not going to do that. I'm going to really, really make an effort to, you know, look around myself and see who's around me on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to just write from my perspective. I'm not only going to write a certain set of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really tried to do with Redemption, was I looked around, especially outside of like socioeconomic lines,
mm-hmm.
and race lines. And I pulled in characters from, and I don't do a lot of, you know, describing them to the nth detail.
Mm-hmm.
I try to treat everybody just as a character, as a blank shell, and, you know, circumstance. You should be able to tell a little bit of their background as you read the book, but I haven't made it a big visual focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in doing that, I started to skew more toward underrepresented characters in general.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had to pull back and say, okay, well, this still needs to be a little bit more reflective of the balance of society. So mm-hmm. I need to find a way to get more white dudes in there again.
I find this really interesting because, you know, there's a story where Bruce Timm and the folks on Batman, the animated series, they were struggling to draw women. They were drawing women like bulky men, you know, and they had to bring a woman in to show them what a female figure should be drawn like. And I always get a kick out of that. I mean, you know, as far as like looking at male characters, and did Nathan provide any insight on that? How did you get to do the male characters as well as you do? I mean, they really fit right into the story and stuff. So I'm always interested in how people do that, because some people say they can't draw or write women because they don't understand the woman's viewpoint on it. But I would think with some research and some folks around, you'd be able to do that. I mean, how did you tackle that?
At the end of the day, people are people, mm-hmm. right? You can mm-hmm. say you've got chromosome XY or XX or one of those 16 plus variations that they've now found that there mm-hmm. are on that. I think at the end of the day, you just need to treat every character as an individual and mm-hmm. as a person. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, it's not difficult, I don't think, to write from a perspective that isn't yours. I mean, it's no different. For me to write a non-white, non-female character is always going to be outside of my perspective, but that doesn't make it undoable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, well, let me ask Nathan then, on the other side of the spectrum, as far as like drawing female characters, what was that like for you? Because, you know, some guys, as I mentioned, like the folks on Batman the Animated Series had to get a woman to come in and show them how it was done. How about you? I mean, male, female characters, how does that work for you?
It was great. No, I'm kidding. Let's see.
He's going to give you the creepy answer.
I'm being a turd. It was funny, actually, as you were talking about that in your story about Batman the Animated Series. That's been my experience also, actually, not just with myself, but in art school. I remember a lot about women complaining that guys were hard to draw and guys complaining about how girls were hard to draw. So I think there's maybe a natural or people are grounded in whatever skin they're in and find the other perspective or getting into another character to be kind of difficult. It takes effort and can be accomplished, of course, mm-hmm. but it may not be natural. So I'm really making an observation more than anything else. But
one that I don't think a lot of people make a huge effort to look at themselves critically and to say, am I only representing my point of view?
Right. But to your question, it was important to me to not have a stock body, a stock face, stock anything. That it's a bit of a pet peeve of mine in a lot of the comics industry. So I try to make sure that everybody has a different specific body type. You have Mac, who's much more of a tomboy, so she's kind of lean and lanky. You have Elnor, who's much more buxom and tends to be a more sexual character. And then you have Dara, who is an athlete, a martial artist, and tends to dress very functionally. So it was important to me that all the characters' designs reflect their function, what they're going to be doing, and, you know, like kind of who they are. As opposed to, you know, just filling the pages with a bunch of sex bots, which I don't think Nadia would have ever allowed me to get away with.
No,
either.
I would have burned it to the ground.
Exactly. And not that I would have either. So, no, character is, like, so super important to me. The characters are the vehicle for the story and are going to make the story go. So having them feel real, be distinct, each character having their own character, that was something that I really wanted to drive home.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to ask you about the bad guy in the series. Normally, in for generations, we've had the black hat be the bad guy. You know, the person who wears the dark outfit, you know, Darth Vader's black, the black clothing and all that stuff. But your guy is against that type. He's much brighter looking, you know, whiter and some blue mixed into his hair and stuff like that. Was that intentional to make him different from what the standard villain looks like?
I wanted him to come off as very elegant. Mm-hmm. I wanted him to... this is a character who has been kind of put upon, treated as less than his entire life. So my logic in that was that he is not necessarily compensating, but wants to impress upon the world that, no, he's smarter than you, he's better than you, and he's an ancient. So that's kind of where that came from. And also, I kind of tried to have each character have their own, you know, inherent color scheme. Mm-hmm. And
Caspian had a lockdown on Black already.
Yeah, Caspian already had the lockdown on Black. And so having him be paler colors and with the purples and the pale colors, it was outside of my natural color scheme and outside of the color scheme that I kind of used for the rest of the characters and the rest of the comic. So it also kind of emphasized his otherness.
Mm-hmm. The thing about Impure Blood that I really like is you don't go the standard route. I could never figure where you were going to go, you know. And years of reading, usually I get to the place and I go, oh, okay, here's where they something. But you guys never did that, including that one turn we talked about, the pivot that I like so much. I just didn't see that coming a mile away, and I was really, really happy with it. When we get to the end, that, you know, I have this real satisfied feeling, you know, that's just great about how the whole system works together to tell this great story about these people. And I guess I'm like you in that sense that, Nathan, I feel sad that we may not see these characters again for a while, because, you know, when you wrap up the story and you like the characters very much, it was like when St. Elsewhere got canceled off television. I lost about 20 friends that I knew very intimately. And so I feel that way with these books, is that there are great characters and they're still going to do wonderful things probably somewhere else, but we're not going to get to read them for a little while. So good stuff.
High five, babe.
I try to make a satisfying story that still manages to surprise people, which is really funny, because I think one of the issues in the very early part of the story is that it's so full of all of the expected tropes and some of the story beats. And when I think when I saw those starting to come out in the art, I thought, well, let's see where I can push this now.
There you go. Very good, very good. Well, why don't you mentioned, Nadja, that you've got the one novel out, Redemption, and you're working on Retribution right now. Any other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
Nothing that is that far in any stage of development. I think I'm going to end up finishing Retribution and putting that out hopefully this year yet. The one and the three-year-old have other ideas. But then I think after that I might jump to put out the first book of the antivirus series and see where that goes. So
okay.
I'm going to kind of be tag-taming two different series.
So how do we keep up with your stuff? Is there like a website we go to or Facebook? How do we do that?
I don't do much. I have a mailing list. I think we linked to the mailing list at the end of Impure Blood. Then you can find me there. I have an author page on Amazon where you can sign up to follow as well.
Okay. All right, Nathan, how about you? You've talked about some of the stuff you're doing. Any other projects that we should be aware of?
Yes, just finished up a 150-page graphic novel called Strategy Man versus the Anti-Strategy Squad. look for that coming out, I believe, later this year, possibly early next year. Let's see, from Roundtable Comics, Roundtable Companies. And I also just submitted I have a short 8-page story coming out in the upcoming Cthulhu is Hard to Spell comic anthology coming out from Wannabe Press.
Is that how you pronounce it? Because I never know how to pronounce it.
Cthulhu is Hard to Spell or Wannabe Press.
Or hard to pronounce, too. Well, that's cool. So, those are any other things?
You can find me. I am at Nathan Luth on all the social medias. I'm on the Holy Trinity, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Nathan Luth, NathanLuth.
Okay.
Although I recommend Instagram because, you know, you can actually see what I'm working on there.
Okay. And so in this post, Comixology has gotten its first dose of Impure Blood. And so be sure to go there and look for it. So it's good stuff. It's terrific. I highly recommend it. It's one of those books that you just want to keep reading and get to. That's why, like I said, when I got to the last page, it was really satisfying, but it was sort of sad because you hate to see a great story come to an end. But, you know, hey, on the other hand, it's a great story with a great end. So it works. Very good stuff. So, well, we'll talk to you guys again sometime in the future, I hope, because you guys do wonderful things, and it's great, great creative stuff. And so hopefully we'll get to talk with you guys again.
You bet.
Sounds good.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
I hope you're enjoying a wonderful holiday season and that you'll be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.